come to order. And then I'm Steve Dillard from Seaside.
Andy Webber from Victoria.
John Reichel.
Mark Smith from Chinook.
Deb Tolan, but they have a hangar here in Australia.
Henry Utica, Camp Berlia.
Andrew Bush from the air station.
And John Ferreira, air station.
Jim Campbell, Port of Astoria Commissioner.
Diana Delgado, Port of Astoria.
And we've got Chris that, are you available to help us with some of this today?
Chris, maybe.
Maybe in and out. So I've got a couple of tiny adjustments to the agenda, if nobody objects. I spoke with Matt, and since he wasn't going to be here today, I asked him to print out some bullet points and send them over as his report. And as you can see, printed over a page. So I would like to start on the reports with people that are already here and move the port staff report down a little length farther down. And then on 3B, I'd requested a discussion about hangar use that's actually related to the Bales hangar leasing and all that kind of stuff. So I think I'd move that up to be a part of that, the 3B. And did you know if Andy was going to be here? Was he the one requesting the exterior?
Andy? Yeah, right here, Andy.
Hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is you requesting exterior speakers?
An exterior external speaker, yes.
External, okay. Let's go to reports and start with the Coast Guard. You guys had a busy summer, right? How's the project going?
Oh, yeah, busy summer. You probably saw a few vehicles out on our ramp over the last couple weeks. We are starting to wrap that up. Andrew Bush is our facilities liaison, working with the contractors and all of that. I think we're getting close to, I think the 18th and 19th are going to be back out. They had another project they had to go take care of, but there was a couple repair items or little line items that they need to come back and correct. So they'll be back the 18th and 19th of this week. Hopefully right after that, the Coast Guard engineers will sign off. The contract is completed. For this season, there is some other work that we needed to amend the contract for, but I don't think it'll happen this season, so we'll probably have to bring some of those folks back out in the spring sometime, but that's still TBD. So in about 2 weeks, our ramp will be back to normal operations. It looks like they've already removed the barriers, and then we'll resume using the front section of the ramp here as well. So there are a couple other projects that are down the line that shouldn't impact air operations. It'll be mostly within our real estate footprint. One of them is going to be an HVAC cleaning and repair for some of the stuff with some of the hazardous dust particles that we're creating inside the workspaces, trying to get some of that stuff cleaned up and put in some new filtration systems and everything for our ventilation. Okay. So they'll have some constructors and workers there for that. And then hoping to improve some of the lighting, and the roof is needing some tender love and care as well. So a couple of those projects over the next year, I'd say. Missing any major ones?
Lights should have better lighting on the ramp here in the next 2 months, which is the end of November or end of October. But again, shouldn't affect you guys, but hopefully we can see better over there.
Okay. Just for night ramp operations.
It'll be the poles that are...
Yeah, just general flood lighting for the ramp for nighttime operations.
On poles.
Yep, the poles are existing. They're just replacing the actual lights themselves, the fixtures, I believe. So they're just not providing enough light for us to go out and do ground movements and cleaning and maintenance and stuff like that. So,
and the parts of the project that are getting pushed in the next season, will that be disruptive at all out here? Or
I don't know which section of the swales
they're
are
doing
there?
All the drainage areas around the edges of the ramp. So it shouldn't. We will be probably going back to operating off the back ramp for a while. They're doing that because they'll be on the all whole.
Pretty soon the perimeter of it. I don't think it'll be as long of a project, but it will probably take up the same area, if you will, because we'll be working the edges of the entire ramp. And I don't know, I would estimate maybe a few weeks to a month for that project to be completed. But again, it's
still being bid on and all
that stuff. Right, we have to basically recontract that, so we're working through that piece right now.
Okay, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
When they were putting your surface together, it smelled like some kind of polymer.
It is some kind of, do you know the name?
So it's like a PPC, they called it, something polymer concrete. So instead of using like traditional cement to mix the concrete together, they use an epoxy. Mm-hmm. So they can lay it much thinner and it's more flexible so it doesn't crack and all that stuff. But yes, it's heavily like epoxy.
It's a top layer. It's not like they redid the entire depth. It was just an additional layer to kind of smooth out imperfections in the existing ramp, and then and remove a lot of what we were having is a lot of the cracks and things were creating spot debris that was constantly having to be cleaned up and pulling out little rocks and pieces of asphalt. So this new coating should seal all that stuff up, so we shouldn't be creating those kind of debris anymore. But, yeah. Let's see.
That's a two-part epoxy they put on there.
Yeah.
They added a kicker on it. That did mix it. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Hopefully, we'll see how it goes, right?
Good.
A few years from now, we'll give you the thumbs up, thumbs down. So, one of the items that came up a little while back, I apologize, we never circled back around. There was a request for maybe some extra paint for the tetrahedron. Was that still a request out on the
floor? Yeah, I don't think, because the weather changed, we didn't get to it in time. I think it'll probably been next year's project.
I did, yeah, that's fine. I did talk to our maintenance folks. They do, on a regular basis, have paint that kind of is going to the expired state, so they might have some stuff available. Just let us know.
Great.
If you're looking for something, we might be able to provide.
Definitely, because we can take it off your guys' hands.
Yeah, yeah, I'll talk to my maintenance, and if they're going to throw it away, I'll try and make sure. I'll get your number after and let you know.
It'll be like a barbecue when we go out there and do it. The
sure.
guys will stand around and the women will do all the work.
couple questions, requests. I'm not sure if this is the perfect or the correct forum for it. We'll probably work with Matt, but perhaps it's a concern or issue for some of the other aviator entities in the room. We notice when we're doing, obviously we do a lot of training here, it's our home unit, and so we're on the pattern very frequently. Especially during summer months, we get a lot of bleed over on the CTAF frequency from some of our other neighboring airports in the vicinity.
Oh, yeah.
Chehalis, Hillsborough, some other spots.
Skippoose. Yeah.
Skippoose, exactly. Is there any bandwidth or ability to request a change in that frequency to a less commonly used frequency? See about that? Or is there something we can, if there's a way we can kind of
I do remember us
champion that?
Talking about that last time. I know we were totally we're trying to find out. I just can't remember. I think it's just something that got kind of pushed aside with everything that was going on.
Yeah.
I know it was something we're looking into to see, because I know not just you guys were saying the same thing, but we get people in all the time to say that. So.
Okay. Yeah, if there's whatever we can do to help push that agenda a little bit, let us know, because we would love to kind of eliminate that potential safety hazard, next mid-air collision, that could be a contributing factor that bleed over from another frequency or something like that. So just obviously for safety. The other thing too is we've been working with the FAA to try and get the approaches, especially the copter ILS 26 approach, lowered. We did some repair work to the fence line and everything like that with our folks. It sounds like the thing that we're being held up on now is the reliability of the ILS approach lighting system. I don't know if that's something you guys are tracking or if that's...
We are tracking, but we know that's all FAA.
Okay.
As far as our...
Yeah.
Certain ground lights we're in charge of, others it's at the
and that ALS is them.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there again any avenues for us to
we keep trying
add
to
add pressure,
person,
I guess.
We ask every single FAA person that comes out here, who do we talk to? They tell us one person, they direct us to another, or you guys being more of an official entity, you probably would have better luck than us.
Okay.
But if we find out anything, we'll definitely.
No, I appreciate that. We had a congressional staff delegation walking by a little bit, and it was something that was brought up. They asked for, anything safety-related and stuff, and that was one thing we did mention to them. So I don't know what traction that will have or if they'll even mention it in any of their briefs or anything like that, but yeah, if there's anything we can do, again, to help with that agenda, we would like to...
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Well, she had brought up, because the last time that congressional delegation came out, that was
the
issue. She was asking if they're fixed yet.
Didn't Independence get their frequency changed down there on account of that?
Yeah, we went about 5-6 years ago. There was a survey done on that because, Ilwaco and Seaside, I think it's 122.9, and there was some discussion about would we be better off with 122.9, and they listened to it and said it was about the same.
Yeah.
So then they were talking about the off one like McMinnville has, which I think is 123.0. They were talking about possibly going that route, but I don't know whatever happened to it. I think it just kind of died on the vine.
Okay, yeah, because that was one of the questions we were saying. Does it have to be limited to only CTAP frequencies? Are there other frequencies in the spectrum that we can maybe access?
They said they're commonly for an airport like this. There's 8 frequencies that they can go to.
Okay.
So.
All right. Yeah, I think if there's a way that we can put in that request formally, let me know, and be happy to send something over that can show you that there's interest in that. appreciate that. And then the last thing, I just want to say thank you for the airport planning documents sent out last few months ago now, but that's, we've been including those in some of the discussions when we talk about some potential expansion of the air station. We've mentioned already in the past, potential to go up to a fourth aircraft in the next 3 to 5 years. So that planning's helped us kind of paint that picture of what the future may look. There is some discussions about expanding that even beyond 4 aircraft. But again, that is very early discussions, no decisions made. But one of the concepts that they're looking at is a joint advanced helicopter rescue school that's supported out of here. And that would include supporting not just Coast Guard, but potentially some other DOD entities trying to do the helicopter rescue training and stuff like that. So again, very, very early stages, no decisions made, no commitments to funding or anything like that. But those discussions are being had. And, you know, that could potentially expand the footprint of the Coast Guard, whether it's within our bounds or if we're going to be seeking additional land for that purpose. So that's still all TBD, very early. But just thank you for the support with the planning that you guys have included us in it. So,
yeah.
What are you guys going to do with the Falcon? Walk her down
no,
there?
No, thank you for bringing that up. Part of the one thing we're waiting is until we get the custody of the ramp back, we can't move anything, and we're waiting for that to be able to pull it back and put it back in the static spot for the time being. We're working different routes for disposition of it right now, but it's going to be at least a year going through the process of getting it off property lists and allowing us to go through the salvage process now. Tillamook was very interested in it. They still show some interest. We may give them like the cockpit as a static display for them to use as a kind of an interactive static display. That's the latest kind of plan right now, but that means we'll probably just chop off the nose and then scrap the rest. We don't know a final yet, but we're still trying to figure out what we're going to do with it. Until then, it's going to go back in its old parking spot. But that's going to wait until they give us thumbs up back for the ramp, and we'll bring it back over. So I apologize. It's been kind of a hanging out on the property here, but we'll get it off shortly.
I would be ashamed to see it get cut off the whole book.
Yeah.
No other way to get it down there unless you guys got those stoves.
Yeah, we helped out with the taking it out, repositioning. I'd say just get it on the pedestal and throw it out there. We can have a military jet, throw the Coast Guard jet on there.
If you want to take it on the property,
we can tow it all the way down to Tillamook. I know it'll be a hard time going through the tunnel, but.
Oh, yeah, we'll know about that.
They got the Spruce Goose to McMinnville. And they got the FAA from the airport.
Right? Well, we could get it there. It's just, it's a funding slash, you know, how much you want to break it down and all that other stuff. And
resources. Barge.
Yeah, that was actually something we brought up too. They haven't given up entirely on it. There's still interest, but right now we hit pause button on there and we'll have to circle back on it. We were this close. I don't know if anybody y'all saw it, but it was about 15 feet in the air for about 30 seconds to a minute. And then there was a load instability on there. I didn't realize this, but the 53s, they had tandem connections, and each one can measure the actual weight. So they were measuring, like, what was it, like 18,000 pounds on the rear pivot point or the rear hoisting point, and about 4,000 on the front. They're like, whoa, we can't do that. Like, that was way too disproportionate. So they ended up bringing it back down. And then at that point, we called it for safety. We said it's not warranted at this point. So anyway. Yeah, long story short there. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Longer than you probably wanted me talking.
So. No. Thanks for the updates. It's been a busy busy year.
Yeah,
so
it's been a busy
you guys
year.
Had a busy summer.
Yeah, we did. We did. We started off with it's called the Flying Start Program, which is for ages 18 and older that express an interest or may be interested in learning how to fly, becoming a pilot. So we invited the public to come. We had pilots here and CFI is here to take them up after a presentation and kind of just like what it's going to cost is basically what we want to know.
Sure.
The time and the cost involved. So we had 9 adults that we flew that day and stayed for the program.
Okay.
Gave them, you know, a breakfast and refreshments and that type of thing. So we had a really good turnout of our EAA chapter. Volunteers have been really good about coming up, showing up for these events.
Okay.
So that was in... That was in May. And then in July, we had the Puget Sound Antique Aircraft Airplane Club. We were stop one. They met in Kelso, and then the next morning, which was like heat wave in Portland, they couldn't wait to get out of Kelso. Mm-hmm. Flew to Astoria. Everyone was shivering because they were all dressed for Kelso Portland weather, and they got here in shorts, and it was like, But thank you for the use of the FBO, because no one wanted to sit outside. But they came. We had over 20 aircraft. I think it was, somebody said 30. I didn't count that many, but we had really nice turnout. Not everyone flew here just because they were going to go on from here to Hood River. So some people just went out to Hood River instead of coming here. But they had a great lunch. They enjoyed our hospitality. They loved the airport and just were very appreciative of the whole stop on their tour.
Good.
So again, another great turnout from our volunteers. We got lunch all ready for them when they came, waiting for what's going to happen with the weather. But they came at lunchtime, and then they reimbursed us for all the expenses. So it was win-win for us, and we just got a chance to meet a lot of nice people.
Good.
So then in August,
thanks for hosting them, by the way. I'm glad they were coming in, but you guys stepped up. I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, John
had
mentioned maybe do a barbecue for them, and
and
our chapter members are like, barbecue? No, we want to look at the airplanes. We don't want to be barbecuing. And so we were like, okay, how about, you know, food trucks? We just couldn't decide what to do. And we just got sandwiches and pre-wrapped them and chips and all that. So, yeah, it was very, we had plenty of room. Some people did sit outside, people that were a little more prepared with jackets and sweatshirts, so... but they were here a couple hours and then flew off. And then in August, we had our Young Eagle Rally. So those are for kids 8 to 17. We have a kind of an issue with the number of pilots that we have available to fly Young Eagles. And there's always the weather concerns. And the week of the event, we had two of our pilots have severe injuries where they're recovering now, but they were unable to fly. So it was like, I think my hesitancy to do too much publicity paid off, because if you get 100 kids here, 60 kids like we did for the open house, there's no way that three pilots could have taken care of that many kids.
Right.
So it worked out fine, and everybody that did come, they were, you know, the kids were great. They were so happy, and we had two children that are one of the life flight pilots. His kids came over.
Great.
He brought them, and so Chris's two came. So we flew 10. Quite a difference from 60 the year before, but it was okay. So we're looking for increasing our membership.
Okay.
And then also being prepared for, if there is an open house, which we hope there is, next summer, that we'll reach out to other chapters that can fly.
Okay.
Because we had that help last open house. It's just snowing to ask it long way in advance.
Yeah.
So we have a couple of people that have expressed interest in joining that and wanting to fly the kids, so... We'll get started on that paperwork and the background checks that are required and everything else. So we'll be prepared for this summer.
Okay. So do you have, what's your schedule look like between now and next spring? Anything going on?
We have nothing.
Okay.
No special events. We are going to have our monthly meetings that we hold here.
Okay.
Which is the first Saturday of the month. And the only other thing that, doesn't pertain to our airport, but our chapter is going to go to Seaside. Some of our members, because they're having a poker run from out of Hillsboro, and kind of a Seaside Airport open house that day. Or
when is that?
Randall, this Saturday.
This Saturday,
yeah.
Okay.
So that's of interest if anybody wants to go and meet some pilots from Hillsboro. So that's about it.
Thank you. Camp Rylea?
Camp Rylea News. Folks might be tracking... Our Air Guard group has switched their mission from radar support for Pang, and they were moved towards cybersecurity. They have now made it's pretty close to a signed off deal. They will be moving and consolidating their cybersecurity group into Pang, so they'll be leaving Camp Rylea soon and completely demobilizing, which is unfortunate for us, but. Other news, we now recently installed a Griffin radar, which helps us with our SARSA compliance with our ranges. Now we can tell when a plane is, even in low visibility, we can tell if a plane is in our SDZs for our ranges. So we won't have to shut down our ranges as often. And we can often operate in foggy and cloudy conditions. So that's going to work out really nice for us.
Great.
Expand our range capabilities and range usage. One of the bigger things that's coming up is the TAG, General Grunwald. He's actually a rotor pilot, but his big drive is UAS and drones. So we are going to be starting to do a lot more training with drones at Camp Rylea. Okay. Low elevation, medical drops, law enforcement, et cetera. And we'll be able to start utilizing Camp Rylea, the entire area for that. So we're looking forward to kind of talking more about that when it's available. We're kind of going through the details now of the memorandum of agreement that we'll be signing with the different entities that will be using the airspace. And then as far as our helipad, we have some improvements that haven't been fully funded or designed yet, but we are making some improvements to our helipad, probably some lighting, and then hopefully what we've noticed is like support for just people waiting for a retrieval or drop for helicopters. So we're going to utilize an existing building and kind of turn it into a helicopter air support area for people. So I know you folks utilize some of our area for training, and kind of hoping that'll help with you guys too. So
okay.
And then you mentioned future, looking for space. I know there's been a couple of groups that have come through from the Coast Guard who have looked for space at Camp Rylea, and I don't know what kind of space you would need for offices or whatever, but we're open to that too. So
okay. Yeah. I'll pass that by.
They just remodeled the whole 116th building, didn't they?
They did. They did. They just sunk about $9.2 million into...
Like a year ago, wasn't it?
They finished it about, yeah, a little over a year ago is when it was finished.
So. Will your new radar be able to pick up those paragliders?
It will, yeah.
Will it? Okay.
Yeah, I have a small, just a small drone, and I actually picked that up as part of our airspace, so... Yeah, it actually worked out pretty good.
I understood their permit was that they always had to stay below the clouds with a paraglider. About 3 weeks ago, I was flying down a Newport, and I was above the clouds. And really, I mean, you know, it was VFR on top. Good VFR, but I was climbing up before I got to Colby Lake where the layer started. And then I went out over the beach, and all of a sudden, here's a paraglider above the clouds. And kind of spooky.
No. I was going to say, I can't even imagine what that looks like.
Yeah. I understood they weren't ever supposed to do that. I don't know what the rules are for them, for sure.
Oh, sounds pretty high for them.
Sometimes they're out there, you know, I mean, if you know it's blowing on an onshore, you can be out over the water and you'll be safe. But sometimes they're kind of out there and where you're not sure where they're at. So.
Yeah. Going back to the drone operations, is that going to be... shoreside, or is that potentially going to go out into the water security zone that you guys have established out there?
They're still kind of working on the details. Right now, I believe it's exclusive to just the fence property,
the real estate.
Not out in the ocean.
Okay. So that was just for passing to my air crews to be aware.
Yeah.
And is that already starting, or still has
it's,
to work
it's
out
still pending, it's still working out some of those details. So, and when we do, we'll make sure everybody knows when we get all the details.
Thank you. I haven't heard from Astoria Aviation. Are there any other FBOs or 10?
I might ask something if I may.
Yeah, sure.
So we have quite a few, you know, tail draggers coming in, and some of them have the big Tundra tires on it. And the rule is every time you land on pavement with one of those, you're burning up $20 worth of rubber. So the port was willing to help out a little bit by off of 3-2 creating that grass strip there. But, you know, this is a Category 4 airport, and we never could have the clearances to declare that as a separate runway. And we do not want people trying to land one on the, unless they're landing as a flight, land on the pavement and on that. So you could let, and the port's going to be neutral on it as far as I understand, you know, and they're not going to sanction it. They're not going to sanction somebody for using it. It's just available to them. They mold it. It's pretty good. It's pretty smooth. In fact, I understand Astoria Aviation landed a 150 out there, and it was good on a tricycle gear too. But anybody that is using it, if you talk to them, please tell them, call it in as landing runway 3-2 on the grass, so we do not get a conflict with designating that as another runway, because we'll never get the clearances for that. The FAA came down on SCAP Boost a few years ago. SCAP Boost did a grass strip right next to the runway between the taxiway and the runway on the east side. And they were calling it a grass strip. Later on, they were same thing. They can land runway 33 on the grass. And so anybody you know that's coming in with a tailwheel, just encourage them to use that and do not try to land there while somebody's landing on 32. Do regular pattern entries.
Mm-hmm. Runway 32 on the grass. That's the approved.
It's not approved or anything. It just keeps confusion out and it keeps somebody else from landing. You know, do the pattern work just like you would if you're going to land on a hard field. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Please don't cross up everything else.
Yeah. But it's available to people and you can use it. It's only 1,000 feet, right?
Roughly.
And they might try to extend that a little bit to maybe 1,400 eventually, but. Right now it's 1,000, but for the planes that primarily use it, that's enough. So,
I guess that answers my question. I was going to say, what if the winds are favoring 2.6 or 2.6 is in use? They're actually out of the way of everybody, right? Kind of.
It'd be a crosswind landing, but still, just
crosswind landing, and they would be if somebody's downwind 2.6, that would be where they would conflict.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
They should be well below the pattern by then, but
okay. Thank you. Henry, you missed the part where I shook things up a little bit. Matt's not here, so he provided a printout of his report, so mm-hmm. I'd like to get back to that. And this is more detail than I had thought, but I would appreciate anybody that has questions or input on any of this, including John, who's leaving the room. Please feel free. You can talk through any of this that you'd like. So we were talking before the meeting about this hangar right here, the minor detail and lease. So for anybody that doesn't know, since our last meeting, I guess the existing lease has been abandoned or whatever that we had this spring. The tenant is out of business and the lease is gone. So now they're in negotiations with another outfit that does auto detailing and has done some aviation detailing, and the port a few days ago approved the lease contingent on FAA approval. So now Matt's going back and forth with the FAA to try to discuss their concerns, which is why would you have an auto detailing business where it's on the ramp? And so that's what they're focused on, and that's the discussion that's happening right now.
Who previously had the lease?
Huh?
Who previously had the lease?
Right away.
The driving school?
Right. And apparently they went toes up in multiple locations, I guess. So.
He's proposing the occupancy would be October 1st. The FAA works that fast?
Proposed.
I saw that too.
The question I got related to that is, the port not think that it was worthwhile to have some sort of transient hangar? Is there no money in that?
I don't know.
I mean, there's enough PC-12s fly down here. I imagine they'd want to get it out of the thing. That'd probably make more money than a monthly lease with a detailing company.
Chris, do you have any information about that?
I cannot say anything on that one.
I mean, I know a heated hangar in Atlantic PDX is, I mean, how much is it going for now, Mark?
It's been a while, but a lot of places we went with the PC-12 and whatnot, we'd always end up renting a hangar to put it in.
Right.
It was lucrative for them, you know, $600 a night.
Yeah.
A night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a heated hangar? Mm-hmm. And you're on the coast, wow. People want to get it out of the salt air, so
yeah.
Any type of small jet or, you know, Honda jet or, you know, whatever, there's a lot of money to be done in transients if you have it available.
You got an $8 million airplane, you know. Exactly. Have a chance to keep it moving.
Well, that's why I was kind of curious why you're trying to shove a relatively non-aviation use into an aviation area. That's probably why the FAA's hung up on.
Right. Well, okay, I'm going to bring in my discussion, which was down in 3B, which is actually related to this discussion since we've already gone there. A few years ago, I was asked to join the committee when the committee lost their South County representative, and also it was a plus that I am in the hospitality business. I was told that. So I realized when I started doing this a few months ago that I see stuff that other people don't because of where I live. I mean, I live constantly in this space of the short-term rental space. And so I've rented a hangar over the decades a couple of times to get my plane off the ramp in foul weather, but it's just a single, just to get a Mooney off the ramp. It wasn't hundreds of dollars. It wasn't even $50, I don't think.
Yeah, that's not the crowd you're aiming for. You're aiming for, like Henry says, the light jets, turboprops, things
right.
like that.
Right, and yeah, and that's the one thing we've got here. I mean, a few years ago we approved plane camping on the airport, which is wonderful for a few weeks a year. But this is Astoria, and we have so much foul weather here. I remember in March we had Doc Hochberg down here, and he had his pretty Mooney sitting out here in the weather, and I thought, wow, if we had transient hangar rental, he could get his plane out of the weather. And then, so that's one thing, is that it's available. I thought it would be not a profit center. I didn't think it would match up with a monthly rent income. We're talking about the hangar right
I'm
here.
I'm sorry. Oh.
And Henry brought up, why would we not rent it to do overnight hangar rentals? Transient hangar rentals for some of the light jets that are coming.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and so that I started thinking about it, and I thought, okay, there in the hospitality business, there are specialty rentals now on the short-term rentals, the RBOs, Airbnbs. I don't know if you have seen that guy on the video that does tree houses. My wife likes watching his videos, and he does all these things. Well, he'll do anything from something that's kind of like an out, you know, kind of an expanded deck for a party, to full-on guest houses. And you can now go on Airbnb and search for treehouse, and you can go rent a treehouse for a weekend. So they've got specialty kinds of things. But I realized, okay, well, we've got air parks where you can go buy a house on a runway. But now they're doing short-term rentals where you would take a hangar like this. And I've been thinking, last winter I started thinking about this because we were talking about putting two more hangars like this in our expansion plans. And it's like, it's just blindingly obvious to me that if you build out an apartment inside one of these hangars, now you have a specialty rental where somebody can come in and put in, whether it's a single or a light jet or whatever, you can put that in there and you can stay over and you've got an apartment. And you were talking about you rented one of the ones where they actually had the courtesy car as well. And so we've got car rentals, we've got that kind of stuff. Anyway, I thought I would mention that simply because I would like to start the discussion, because we haven't done funding, we haven't done anything else on these things. But if you take a transient hangar rental and marry it to an Airbnb, you get something like this. Mm. And so that could turn... Oh, let me back up. That was the other thing is I was trying to figure out, since I started in January, been trying to figure out, how do you increase people coming into Astoria? Well, obviously, if we could get a restaurant here, that would be great, but we don't have the, we're not able to bootstrap that. We don't have the regular local traffic that could support a restaurant, and it would provide a place to come for people on the weekends to fly into. But and it's nice that we have FBOs, we have maintenance people, we have other FBOs that are here. But something like this, where you can have a destination place, somebody could do that on a trip. You could do that all months of the year, rather than just 8 or 10 weeks during the summer where you can camp under your wing out here. You could actually do this year round, or it could be a destination. You want to go to the coast for 2 or 3 nights and get away, and you can have get your plane out of the weather, and you can, yeah, you get a car, you can travel around, you can come down for an event. Anyway, I see that as a viable alternative for one of those hangars that we would eventually build. And since this conversation came back up, and it's in process, the discussion's in process. Anyway, if anybody has questions, I can talk about it, but that was an idea that I have had that I wanted to mention once it settled down after the summer. What's that?
This almost looks like Hicks Field in Fort Worth, Texas.
I think it is. This is Texas.
It's in Texas.
Haslett, yeah. Texas? Is that out of
yep.
Fort Worth?
That's, yeah, so that's Hicks Field.
Yeah.
And they have Well, my son rented a hangar there
that
had an apartment in it when he first started working down at Lockheed Martin. And he was in hangar 747. So,
cute,
but it went from hangar 1 to pass 747.
That's a lot of hangars.
That's a lot of hangars on a private field. But they also had a little restaurant in there called the Beacon Cafe, and they would do like a Sunday brunch there that would just, God, it was unbelievable. But anyway.
There's a place down out on Mojave that used to have a great place for brunch.
Yeah.
On the field.
Oh, yeah, that cafe down there on the field, yeah.
Rose.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, so I spoke to Henry briefly about permitting with the city of Warrenton. It is possible at the point that this even gets into the plans and numbers and proposals and stuff start, we could, it is a possibility to get either conditional use or a permit.
If I can clarify that. So I mentioned this multiple times to Matt and previous executive directors of the port. I'm happy to support anything that the port wants to do if it doesn't allow in zoning to get the zoning changed. We just need to start the conversation a year in advance before we need it. Because if it gets dropped on us last minute, I've said this 5 years going, it always becomes a problem.
Sure.
You know, because zone changes take Oregon law 6 months to a year to get done. I mean, you know that very well, John. You know that, Steve. So they're not easy to do, but I'm happy to sponsor that as mayor to get that moving because I actually, back when we did the zone change to allow food carts and for allowing tent camping on the airport, I'd asked about long-term rentals. Nobody at the time wanted that. So I know there is some plans, and I've talked to Matt about, you know, some other things around the airport to do some kind of niche experiences that could include that. And I think those would be exciting ways to draw more attention to the airport and make it a draw. But it would have to be, we'd have to do a change of use in the zone to allow a conditional use for a vacation rental.
Yeah. But that's a possibility. So the legal stuff is possible. We'd have to do something. Even if we were tomorrow to start over here, we'd have to build out the whole apartment, get the permitting, all that kind of stuff. So this is not something that's going to happen this year, but I wanted to start the discussion because I think it's a very valid use. And again, could turn. If you were in Seattle and said, hey, let's get away for the weekend, and you had a place to come, you could come over here in November. You know, just wait for a break in the weather, hop over here, button up your plane, and then do whatever you would do. You
know? Steve, I don't know if you've talked to Port Staff about this yet or not, but FEMA just released their draft EIS for the FEMA buyout. And if the port doesn't have their floodplain permits, and I told Matt this a while ago, get your floodplain permits for the whole airport, just make a big blanket one. Just preempt it, because once you get your floodplain permit, it preempts the regulations after they get put into effect. Otherwise, it's not an issue of wetlands, it's a matter of just being in the floodplain. FEMA will require you to, when you put in fill, you're going to have to take out fill and create moats. And there's pretty onerous requirements in permitting. The city of Warrenton's suing FEMA over the issue, but it's a kind of a long shot. So if you look at the generator shed out there that's got the concrete that's raised up that high, that's what everything that's going to have any type of occupation is going to be built to.
I see.
That's the tricky part about any type of, that's the floodplain level. So, hopefully the port has or will be submitting floodplain permits for any and all properties they wish to develop, not just now and in the 5-year future, but in the 20, 40-year future.
Okay.
Because I can't guarantee what the outcome of that lawsuit's going to be. And once the draft EIS is accepted, which we all know the federal government does everything pretty pro forma, it's not really a public forum, it's mostly just, sorry guys and the feds, but you know, we all know how that rulemaking works. So they'll take it through, and then they expect that they'll probably try to shoot implementation next year. Although there's a lawsuit that goes to the judge in October that says it needs to be implemented ASAP, which could mean 1st of November. So
yeah. They'll never go back to certifying the dikes, and that's.
Oh, you got $43 million. So we're working on it. FEMA keeps changing the goalposts. Originally, if you got core certification, then FEMA would just, you know, give it a nice little blessing and call it a day. Now FEMA is saying, no, you don't need core certification. You need to be in the core inspection program. But FEMA needs to certify it. And if FEMA certifies it, then we can do a lot of letter of map revision. But that's the feds built the levees, and they have to make us core sample survey test and do a geotech surveys and engineering on every of the 16 miles of levees to tell them that they engineered it right. So then they can turn around and ask questions and then certify. It's kind of a big joke.
Not going to happen anytime, huh?
It's not anything. We lost provisional accreditation on District 1 because we got a year of provisional accreditation, which is why floodplain levels in District 1, which is basically most of it is east of or west of west of Skipanon. It's lost. And then here's the better part. There's more. Risk 2.0 maps came out thanks to Governor Brown. She designated Warrenton as her specialty place to start Risk 2.0 mapping. And under the Risk 2.0 mapping, they're going to include double the amount of properties that are not in the floodplain into the floodplain in Warrenton, which would then double the coverage for the buyout, making 88% of Warrenton's population required to get flood insurance if they didn't have it already.
What does she have against Warrenton?
I pissed her off during COVID. Sorry. I think she just likes the coast and her environmental friend wanted to do it, you know.
Make sure we don't get
flooded. Originally, we'd asked them to be honest with you, we asked them to remap it because there was an errant data point that was causing the elevations to be 3 feet higher than they needed to be. And instead we got, we'll give you this instead, which was not better. So they didn't take the errant data point out.
Instead of lowering the one that was too tall, they said, we'll just raise all the rest of them.
That's pretty much what they did.
On this thing with the occupancy and if it was a transient, what do you picture as a timeline that, you know, would it be like, oh, we're just going to trash this and just say, okay, starting next month, we're just going to offer a transient hangar? Or is it like, you know, trying to plan that would take a year or so, and during that year, if it was leased out to a tenant, you would at least get some revenue from it while you're doing the plan to make it into something that's...
Well, yeah, my original thought was the plan, I've got a map somewhere where that Matt had handed out with the plan to build out two more of those hangars between here and the Coast Guard. I was thinking, okay, well, that would be great to plan that in.
Right.
Yeah, I don't see this happening in this fall.
Right, exactly.
So,
There's
a hangar sitting there, but if you started tomorrow to get a permit to build an apartment in it, how long would that take, right?
That's what I'm saying.
If
it's something that the port decides to do that, yeah, we want to make that into a transient, you want to put an apartment in it, well, there's a process of getting permits for that and processes and whatever. And if during that time, well, instead of just having it sitting there, this company, the FAA said it was okay.
Since this had circled back, I wanted to talk to people. It was busy all summer, so I thought, why start something like this before summer? And then this conversation came up because those other folks failed. This is now an active discussion. So I thought, this is a good time to bring it up.
Okay.
I have no timeline.
Okay.
I know it's going to take months or even years.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't say your timeline, just an estimate. Yeah, because I've dealt with this before. It usually takes about this much time.
No, usually when you talk short-term rentals, you're talking about an existing structure that people live in, and it's a permitting thing.
Right.
This would be actually having all that meeting, and then, we got to build something too.
Okay.
Rather than just, there's a bathroom there, and we're going to throw down a cot and a microwave.
Right.
Yeah.
But my thought was that if like Henry said that, you know, why aren't you using it as transient? Does that negate what the conversation has been to lease this out? Does anyone follow what I'm
Matt
saying?
Matt isn't here, and Matt's in active conversation, and the commission just approved, Monday night?
Last Thursday.
Yeah, this lease.
Okay.
They approved the lease contingent upon...
The FAA.
FAA signing it.
Okay.
And the state. Something about the state, too.
Yeah, state ODAs.
Federal and state.
Okay.
So basically, that puts it into a 5-year lock-in, but
obviously,
if they build, you know, if they ever do the build-out for the other executive hangars, I mean, you could always plan differently there, too, as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be curious to see if the state ODA gets involved, if they ever trigger any DEQ permits related to stormwater discharge for the detailing water.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually been a killer for businesses in our town, or at least, in downtown, people try to start this up, and we're like, good to go, and then DEQ comes and says, we're here to help, and then says, you need 1,200 DES permit.
I thought that, wasn't that already a discussion there, that you had to pull a full water recycling containment or something in there.
Gosh, that's expensive.
And then
you gotta really want it. Good for him. I mean, he's the one guy who could do it. So, I know our former port commissioner in Astoria turned his neighbor in for that issue too. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. If I may,
yes.
Mr. Chair, just as a tenant report, Oshkosh Aerotech, as you may or may not know, offshored some of its production to Chennai, India. That was a very short-lived... sorry, not Chennai, India. That's a different product line. We, when it was still owned by JVT, we offshored it to Juarez, Mexico. The quality out of there was abysmal, and it was a very bad failed experiment, very expensive failed experiment. The newest product line under the Electro product line, because Electros have previously always and only been built in Warrington, due to capacity restrictions, we had moved production line of the 88i to solely over in Orlando at our other plant there. And we are trying to do some internal reshuffling, I guess you could say, to make the internal space more efficient so that we can bring back 88i production to make Electros are once again only built in Warrington, but that's currently where it's at, and there's currently some work on trying to, as they call it, improve other product lines to make them smarter and all that. But I'll just say that don't put this in the record, but if you were to buy a product from Orlando, I probably wouldn't buy it right now. Buy it from Warrington. The quality's a lot better.
Okay.
We're, I think, in about 6 months, we should bring back the 88i line back to Warrington.
Okay.
For various reasons.
Is that going to change staffing at all? Or?
Yeah, we'd have to boost up staffing a little bit. We're already currently running kind of a skeleton shift on the weekends. It'd be nice to boost that up a little bit more. Problem is retention. You get people, and then they get hired, and drug tests pop hot because we're a federal contractor. That's no go.
Oh, right.
Or, you know, thanks for the job for 2 weeks. Moving on somewhere else. Just ghost us. Retention's a pretty rough problem for manufacturing right now. So, but we've got about 91 right now. So
okay.
It'd be nice to get up to our historic like 120, something like that, if we could. Don't know if that'll happen or not.
Thank you. Are you back?
Yeah.
So you had stepped out just as we were talking about the minor detailing lease. Do you have any more input on that?
No, you know, I'm kind of opposed to it. And it's not the business. I know the kid, he's hardworking, he's diligent, there's no issue there. But I drive by there every time I come to the airport. And, you know, they get some high-end cars and some sports cars there. And I've seen those guys, you know, he'll put them outside and they go pick up their car. There's a straightaway there. And I'd probably be tempted to do the same thing if you got a Porsche and you want to open it up on that straightaway. But they come out right next to the Coast Guard ramp. They're going to, and they see this. I just think there has to be some really tight controls that customers do not come on the ramp.
Customers,
that's my biggest concern. What's that?
Customers wouldn't be bringing their vehicles and drop them off right here.
Is that right?
It's only the employees, if it happens, it's only the employees that can drive the vehicle.
I've seen as many as 12, 15 cars parked here. That's going to happen here too. People drop them off and leave them for a week or so at a time to get them detailed. And yeah, they go somewhere else out of town or something while they're doing that. But you can't have that many cars parked out here. We don't have the parking, number one.
Oh, no, we've already addressed that.
You're not
going to
keep it down to
a few spots here that they would
You're not going to keep it down to two cars. They got two parking places.
He did say it would be 3 to 4 vehicles a day.
Pardon?
He did say that it would be 3 to 4 vehicles a day. He made that clear in the commission meeting.
I runs a good business, you know, so.
Yeah.
But, I hate to see a aircraft structure being used for something else, but sometimes I guess you have to, so.
Okay. The second part here, the industrial park development, does anybody have any input on that or any questions or? Chris, this came from Matt, so
work.
If you know any of this.
I know they did core work to make sure the land was good.
Okay.
Finished that up a few weeks ago. As far as the results from that, I'm not sure. I do know everything seems to be going pretty good about getting the two 10,000 foot square foot buildings put up that you can section off and make a bunch of different shops out of, or just one big shop that someone can take it. I know everything seems to be on track as far as the details. I'm not sure.
Okay. And then the T-hanger rehab, you said they were working on the steel railings on the A-row, is that right?
Yes, A-row and then B1.
Oh, B1.
It'll be like a test one, but
okay.
All of A-row front and back, and then B1 should be fixed. And I want to say, I don't have the exact date, but I know here within the next couple months, I think that's supposed to get started.
I'm sorry, started when?
Within the next couple of months. I think it's supposed to start on the exact date on that.
Okay. And then, so the existing doors will stay, but he was talking about possibly replacing the wheels too. So
yes, while each door comes down, me and John will be replacing the wheels so we can get rid of all the nylon ones.
So it should be good to go then with brand new type doors.
That's the plan. So if it lasts another 50, 60 years, the next guy has to deal with it.
The new FBO on the staff report for the FBO, I thought we were getting I thought the FBO was going to get like three stories with like a fishbowl and all that. Mm-hmm. This doesn't seem to describe that.
It's just the bathrooms.
Yeah, it looks like the bathrooms and doors.
And putting a sink
right
over here.
Yeah, for right now, the main priority is the bathroom.
Gotcha.
And they're going to put a sink in this counter area and more cupboards? Above the microwave, or the...
I wasn't there for that part because I know things changed on that one, because I know it was supposed to go from two bathrooms to three and then a shower, and it sounds like it's two bathrooms and both of them will have a way for the showers to connect. I think it's whatever they come up with in the plans, and then takes it to the commission, whatever they finally approve on. But as far as I know the goal was to have three unisex bathrooms. One will have a shower, half the kitchen will be taken, and kind of updated.
Okay, so the kitchen will still be there, but this won't be as
half
large.
Half the size, but the oven and stuff like that is gone, because as far as a restaurant coming back here.
It'd be nice to have a sink.
Well, there is a small little one.
But there's no faucet.
Yeah.
There's okay. <It's not little>. There used to be one.
Like a foot by foot. Hot water and everything.
Okay. And Henry, that's for the future, so that is still in the plans, but this one is just based on a grant that we received from the FAA, I believe. Then this is just a very limited repairs that we're able to make.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's good.
That's still in the future.
Long
mm-hmm.
Right. Well, we're not ADA compliant right now anyway, right?
Correct. As far as I know, no.
That's not good enough?
What's that?
The ramp?
Oh, for the restrooms.
Oh.
But not within a mile, yeah. Okay. So, any other questions on Matt's report? New business, you wanted to...
I just had one question.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, so did LifeLite figure out their space okay? Because they were asking for...
They got a habitable trailer out there now, so...
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
For the life.
I wasn't able to accommodate them on camp, so I just...
Yeah. Do they get to use their hangars? I didn't hear whether they get to use the hangar space while they're living in a trailer. What's
the maintenance
that?
Side is unaffected. It's only the living quarters.
Okay. Well, that was short term for the building. You know, it's only, what, about 5 years old?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they have to rebuild it.
So how long will that take?
That trailer will be there for...
I think they're estimated 2 months.
2 to 3 months.
3 months. Not very long. Not very long for a new building.
Water penetrated. You have to tear the walls out and rebuild them.
Wow.
And he came back one day and all the pipes in the ceiling had burst and all the stuff on the ground was all soaked. Everything got destroyed.
So they had to work those contractors with them on the
I don't know what happened there. Because they were like cookie cutter facilities from Aurora, you know, that they were building for the other LifeLites too. So I don't know why it went bad on them. So, other than here, they had to elevate the living area, you know, to floodplain.
So, three new business discussion items. You wanted to talk about an exterior speaker. Is that what
external speaker? External. Yeah, external speaker. So,
I was volunteer for the EA things and the, and whatever, and there's lots of people standing out on the deck out there. We're watching planes going in and out, and I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool to have a speaker out there that's hooked into the radio, so that
so you can hear it in here, but you can't hear it out there.
Oh no, you can tie them together so you can hear it in here and you can hear
it no, there too. But right now you can't.
Okay. Yeah, correct. Yeah, and I there's a couple of commissioners that are out there. I said, what do you think about that? That's a great idea. And I said, okay. So I said, well, I'll bring it up at the airport meeting.
Okay.
So I think Johnson said that there he thought that there was wiring up there already. That they used to have one here.
I thought they used to. Way back
yeah.
in the...
Yeah.
There used to be an observation building on top.
Yeah.
And there was a remote radio up there, and there was a speaker just on the outside of the door.
Yeah.
So
yeah, so just, you know, tucked up underneath the eaves right there would be fine.
I think our parents would really enjoy that.
Exactly, when they're listening for their kids to come in, you know, on the flights and things like that.
And
that,
even as we know, well, we have a handheld.
Exactly.
Out of the table, so we know what pilots come in and pull their folder. But
there's like four or five people that are carrying around a handheld, but, you know, the other people around are like, oh, I have no idea, but, you know. But at least, you know, if they heard something, you know, they go, then you can explain, you know, what the radio call was or something to them. The other people are, you get hear like those anti-planes coming in, calling in. So anyways, I just thought, I wouldn't think it would be a big ticket item to throw a wireless speaker there. And if, you know, on the line coming down here, you could put a switch on it and you could turn off the outside one, just leave the inside one going.
Sure.
So,
would pilots trying to rest like to have the radio going all the time, though? I'm not sure. I'm not a pilot, so I don't know.
Say that again.
If you had it inside, wouldn't people get annoyed with that? If they were coming in here to relax.
It's already inside. It's behind
it?
You. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I guess I never hear it.
Right. Yeah. So.
I get annoyed by the handheld ones because it's so much squawk.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like. Static and nasty. I hate it.
Yeah.
I would rather have one that was reliable. I'm sure if we had one before, it probably just succumbed to the elements and they just never replaced it.
So nobody remembers a discussion why they would have removed an exterior speaker from the
board? Yeah, because they took all the equipment off of it.
Yeah.
The weather equipment was all up there and everything. So,
when they tore things down for a rebuild, then they just never put it back on?
No.
Yeah, they removed the building because it was leaking on the roof, and they thought that was causing it. It ended up being on the edge, draining through. But they removed that building up on top. There used to be a spiral staircase that went up to it in here. So.
Okay.
And they had the speaker just hanging there.
So, okay, so we could put just the speaker back. Okay. Okay. Any other new business?
If I may, just one thing, while the Coast Guard is here. You know, because we see your firefighters, you know, hitting the ramp and going down through it, familiarizing themselves. About 5-6 years ago, Warrenton Fire and your people, we went through a training process to talk about the BRS chutes that are in, like, the Cirruses and stuff. Because one firefighter got killed when they didn't deploy the chute and they crashed. And they took the, and they started to cut the people out.
Ooh.
They activated it and it got killed. It's a ballistic little missile. Well, now more and more, not just the SR-22s and stuff, more and more people are retrofitting. There's some 182s that have them in, and it's some of the ultralights and the sport planes. So I don't know. Maybe your people are current on that. If not, it might be something to bring up. And if they ever want to, we can bring airplanes out here. We got a guy out here that comes in one of the SR-22, so they could see what it looks like, you know, and be aware of it, because they can kill if they go through, because they eject right through the
rocket motor.
Yeah.
I definitely asked.
Well, after the V-tail Bonanza had that short field landing there, we reached out to Warrenton. We're working to get some training in the future here with them, so some cross training, so that I think they, you know, make sure everybody understands their roles, responsibilities, on hours, off hours, everything like that. I'll definitely bring this up with our flight safety and ground safety folks and have them include that in the discussion, so make sure they're aware if they're, you know, doing a response to an aircraft, civilian aircraft that potentially has that capability, then that they know what to look for. So,
is there any way that we could get tied into that? Just on the spot, because I mean, after those guys crashed, they went online,
absolutely.
Found a number to text, and and they text my boss saying, "Yeah, I just crashed Mr. 3426. Next thing you know, he's calling me to go pick them up as they were waiting right outside the gate.
I got here,
I got them to the FBO, and that's when we got here. Your guys were all responding over there, but our handset on the truck is a little fidgety, so it didn't work when I was trying to tell them that, hey, I got the pallets over here. And there's no
nobody in there.
So no one heard anything, so everyone's responding over there. I've got the pallets here, trying to get medical staff here. Everyone's just going all over the place.
Yeah, I think Warrington couldn't get on because they tried to come through our gate instead of coming through the FBO, you know, the normal airport access. So there's a couple things that there's definitely some hot wash after that to say, like, hey, you know, what are ways we can do it better? Like, yeah, I'll definitely include you guys in there as well.
I mean, I know we're just a little small part of it.
When I got the call, my first call is to Matt and say, "Hey, are you tracking this?" He's like, "Yep, I already know." I was like, "Okay, just wanted to make sure."
I was the first.
That'd be great. Yeah, that's important. The communication was, Fortunately, nobody was.
Because I was already at home. I literally just took my sweatshirt off and phone rings. It's Matt calling me, like, "Hey, you'll never guess what just happened." Tells me, next thing I know, I'm hauling ass back, pardon my language, getting back here as fast as possible without getting pulled over. And sure enough, there's two guys right at the entrance gate at the end of 2-6. There's a plane nose down in the field.
It's
actually happening.
It was exciting summer. What
happened? Process question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Do we need to formally vote or something like that to provide the consensus of the committee on any of the items that have been presented?
No, it was mostly reports today. As far as the speaker goes, I'll ping Matt on that and see if he needs to talk to anybody about that. That would be just thinking that big an item in the budget, whether you run cable over there or do wireless or whatever. Other than that, I think it was mostly just a follow-up from the summer.
I'm sure that's kind of down on the list. We got 170-some thousand dollar thing.
Yeah.
Do this remodel. And to get everything they want, it's going to squeeze it.
If we get
that on...
Speaker
would probably be at the end of the list. But
I agree. And I'm not going to try to prioritize
it.
But if it's in the list, great. If it's page 4 of the list and it gets funded in another year, then at least the discussion's happening.
Yeah.
Would it be possible for somebody to donate the labor and supplies part?
Again, we can talk to Matt about that. I'd like to work with him. If he's leaning forward on that, then I'm sure there's one. Okay. Including that, reefer speaker pulled off or something. Anything else to go to the order? I don't know of a reason to meet in December or November, so I just put January 12th for the next meeting. And if anybody comes up with a reason to change it, let me know. We'll talk in the next few months. And can you two make sure your email...
We'll talk about that,
sorry, you're still not getting the last emails there.
It's okay. I know your phone.
Okay. Fair enough. That works. All right, then we're adjourned.